This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech, the podcast that keeps you updated and educated.
Hello and welcome to Tech Guide, episode 545. Thanks for joining us. Glad you could join us once again. Thank you for listening. My name is Stephen Fenech. I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. Now, apologies for there not being a show last week. Unfortunately, I was ill and was in no condition to record that episode. So I had the week off, but I'm feeling fine and back on air with you guys right now. On this week's show, Ford has its all-electric Mustang SUV heading to Australia. Apple has confirmed the date for Worldwide Developers Conference 2023, and we'll talk about what we can expect to see. And the NBN is offering faster speeds for regional Australians. In the Tech Guide reviews, we get behind the wheel of the Tesla Model Y performance. We take a listen to the new Sonos Era 100 and Era 300 speakers, and we'll talk about a new robot that can clean your windows. And we'll answer all of your tech questions in the Tech Guide Help Desk. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, the company that keeps you connected, and Norton, the company that keeps you protected. Well, we've just had the Australian Grand Prix over the weekend, and Ford took the opportunity in the lead up to the actual race, so last Thursday, to unveil its all new Mustang Mach E SUV. So this is the new all electric passenger vehicle. It's Ford's first all electric passenger vehicle released by Ford Australia. And it's going to have three variants and will obviously offer an amazing driving experience and a lot of technology on board as well. But at its essence, Ford is saying it still maintains its Mustang heritage. It was unveiled at the Formula One by Aussie driver Daniel Ricciardo. He was on hand to make that announcement. And this is an SUV, so it's not a sedan, so it looks a lot like the Tesla Model Y that we're going to talk about a little bit later with that sort of larger rear section of the car. So it is an SUV that happens to be one of the most popular segments of the car market and a very popular choice, I think, for Ford to offer this up as their first all-electric passenger vehicle before the end of the year. Release time, they're saying, is before year's end, so we're assuming that's going to be quarter four, so anytime October, November, December. But they are promising it will reach Australians before the end of the year. Australians and New Zealanders too, they're going to get this model also. So it is, though, this is Ford leaning on a really special part of the brand. The Mustang brand is something that's been very popular with Australian customers. And there's no doubt that this EV version of the Mustang, the Mach E, will also offer that same thrill. Now, I mentioned there are going to be three variants for the car. So you're going to have your traditional GT model. There'll also be the Select and Premium variants as well. Let's talk about, though, what the flagship GT model is going to serve up. It's going to have a 91 kilowatt hour battery, dual electric motors. It's going to have a range of 490 kilometers, and it's going to get you 0 to 100 in just 3.7 seconds. Which are all very impressive stats right there. And that speed, 0 to 100 in 3.7 seconds, will make it the fastest accelerating vehicle Ford has ever offered in Australia. So that's going to give it a little bit of a kick. Now, what's also on board is a feature called MagnaRide, and this is it's a suspension technology as well as performance brakes on this car as well, because you go from 0 to 100 in 3.7 seconds. You want to have a really good set of performance brakes to be able to slow you down a little bit. The other models, as I said, Select and Premium, they, along with the GT, of course, all models will come with the special Untame drive mode. Now, this is a mode that improves acceleration and braking and offers a refined steering response, so you can really give it a little bit. But all in, on the inside, of course, Ford are presenting a pretty comfortable and luxurious cabin. In the center of the car, as is now customary with EVs, especially Teslas, is a massive screen, a 15.5-inch infotainment screen, which runs Ford's very own Sync 4 operating system. Now, there will also be a 10.2-inch digital cluster right in front of the steering wheel, of course, and there's going to be also 10-speaker Bang & Olufsen sound system. So it's really ticking all the boxes for those amazing features you'd want in a car. So EV, big tick. Those stats, 91 kilowatt battery, 490 kilometer range, 0 to 100 in 3.7 seconds. That's up there. As well as that amazing 15.5-inch screen, 10.2-inch digital cluster. So it is – and that speaker system, wow, Bang & Olufsen 10-speaker sound system. This is going to sound tremendous, this car. Now, question is, of course, how much is it going to cost? And Ford have not released that information. Their only comment is that the full list of features for those other variants, remember I told you the Select and Premium variants, yet to be announced. And, of course, yet also to be announced is pricing. Pricing, they say, Ford says, will be revealed closer to launch date. So it's probably months away before they announce pricing for the Ford. And I'm pretty sure you can't order it just yet. So I think it'll be offered for customers, I think, to place orders so that it does make the end of the year. But it just does add another choice for drivers who are looking to move into an EV. So you've got, of course, your Teslas. There's the MG range of cars. You've got BYD, Kia, all these brands. Mercedes-Benz with the EQE. They've got all these brands now coming forward with their electric vehicles. And not just brands like Tesla, BYD, Polestar. They're only offering EVs. But you've got your other brands. You've got Mercedes-Benz, Audi, Ford, we're just talking about. These are established car brands that are now electrifying their range, as is Volvo, all these other, Renault, all these other brands that are bringing forward their EVs. So it is a real, there's a lot of choice now, I think, for drivers. Cost, I think, is still a little bit out of most drivers' reach, but I think with this competition, with more EVs offering on offer for sale in Australia, it is going to create that competition. And I think that the company that can nail the price with the features is going to win a lot of customers. I think there are a lot of customers waiting for the right offer. They're waiting for there to be a car that's in their wheelhouse, in their price range, that offers the features, offers everything they need. And I think that the cost being the number one thing that's keeping them back, I think that there are opportunities for car companies to really win over customers if they do deliver a model at the right price. Now, I think just looking at those specs of the Ford Mustang, the Mark E Mustang, the GT model, I'd be very surprised if that was less than 90,000 Australian dollars. It's probably going to be even more expensive than that. I think it might even be a 100K plus vehicle, where the Select and the Premium variants were perhaps going to be the more you around the 60 to 70, perhaps even $80,000 range. So I think I don't foresee the Ford, the Mark E Mustang EV being on the more affordable side of the ledger, whereas you've got brands like MG Motor, who have their ZS EV, which is less than $50,000. BYD also less than $50,000 and doing great business, as is MG. So there is room for that affordable car. Don't think it's going to be the Ford, but there are plenty of other models that are heading our way that could very well be your next vehicle. That could meet all your criteria and be at the right price. If you want to read more about the Ford Mustang Mark E EV that's heading our way, you can check it out, techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech.
Big news from Apple a few days ago. They have confirmed the 2023 Worldwide Developers Conference will kick off on June 5, which is early June 6 Australian Eastern Standard Time. So it is going to be an online format event as well, but there will be a special in-person event at Apple Park as well. That's what they did in 2022, and they are going to, by the sounds of it, offer the same setup for Worldwide Developers Conference, because traditionally it used to be held in San Jose. I've attended Worldwide Developers Conference for more than 10 years, and it's obviously was pre-COVID. It was an in-person event where developers had to pay to get themselves there, be able to interact with Apple developers and engineers, and hear all the latest news about the new software. Because don't forget, it's a developers conference, so they'll hear the updates for iPhone, iOS 17, iPadOS 17, macOS, watchOS 10. They'll also have the Apple TV OS. So they're hearing all the new software features that are going to be part of the new versions of that software, the operating systems, and they'll want to then be able to utilize those new features and abilities in their own apps. That's why it's called the Developers Conference. And Apple really have a huge developer ecosystem that are extremely powerful in terms of what they create and the ability for them to share their work through the App Store. It is quite a setup for developers. So we've seen the app economy is exploding around the world, including here in Australia. And this is an event that is very much a very important event on their calendar. It's, I think, cost-wise, I think Apple realized that they can still have the event, albeit online. Developers can still get as much out of it as they could with them on the ground. Now, on the ground, of course, they had a lot of networking and being able to actually be here in person to talk to Apple in person, but they are still getting all of those benefits with the event being online, and it's free as well for developers, because when it was an in-person event, it cost them. They had to get themselves here. It was had to pay big money for the tickets, and it was quite a bit of spend there. But I think Apple have realized that they're saving money themselves. The developers are saving money themselves, yet still getting the desired result out of having it online anyway. So they're still getting that's the ability to take part in sessions and to also interact with Apple engineers. So they're still getting that ability. Now, what can we expect to see? We, of course, know we're going to see the latest iPhone software, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, Apple TV, but there are several whispers around about what else we may be able to see. Now, at past Worldwide Developers Conferences, we have seen product announced, not just software. I've been at many of these WWDCs and seen laptops and speakers and all kinds of products announced at the event. And this year, the biggest rumors seem to be around to a couple of new products. There's talk of a 15-inch MacBook Air. So the traditional MacBook Air has only ever been offered as a 13-inch, 13.6-inch or 13.3-inch, or 13-inch model to be precise. But the rumor is there could be a 15.5-inch MacBook Air, which, imagine that, having the thin and light model in a screen size that you would need to put before this. Have to buy a pro model to get a screen of that size. So I think that's a really good move, a smart move. That would really lift sales in the MacBook Air department, absolutely. Now, the other big talk is around the Mac Pro. Now, this was another Worldwide Developers Conference announcement a few years ago, and What we're waiting for here is for Apple Silicon to come on board and replace the Intel chip. So if you buy a MacBook Mac Pro today, which is a standalone desktop computer, it is still running Intel Silicon. And Apple have said in the past it's going to take several or a couple of years to transition all of their computers over to their own silicon. So we've seen the M1, and now we have M2. These are the chips I'm talking about. So perhaps the new Apple Silicon Mac Pro could be announced as well. And we're up to M2, and there's M2 Max, M2 Ultra. So imagine the power of these computers. But where does that put the Mac Studio? They announced that a year ago, the first Mac Studio, which was a standalone, like a Mac Mini on steroids, but aimed at the pro market. It used the M1 Max and M1 Ultra chips. So you'd think it's been a year, then that'd be a no-brainer that they're going to put an M2 in there. I currently run a Mac Studio M1 Max machine right now. I'm using that. That's part of my setup here to record this podcast. But it'd be interesting to see if they do actually come up with an M2 Mac Studio and where that would stand against the Mac Pro if that in turn earned an M2 chip as well. So interesting to see what Apple comes up with. Now, the other massive, massive rumor and has been around for a while is the Apple AR/VR headset. We've been talking about this, I think, for 5 years. There's been talk of a AR/VR mixed reality headset. Now, what better time to announce this product and give developers something to develop for than at the Worldwide Developers Conference? Can you imagine if Apple decided to maybe just to unveil the headset, and no doubt there'll be the VR OS, whatever OS is running on this thing, that will also be a chance to A, introduce the OS, B, give us maybe a sneak peek at the device if they don't actually reveal it in full. But it would really G up the developers knowing that, oh, hang on, we've got this other thing we can develop for now. And the talk around this is so positive, even from competing VR companies. They can't wait for Apple to put out a VR headset because it's going to bring so much attention to VR and AR. And so it's the whole rising tide lifting all boats theory here, where once Apple gets involved in something, it validates it. And it's really, customers will suddenly think, wow, how good's this VR? Apple are doing it, must be good. That seems to have been the effect I've seen over the years. Apple have often had that effect on customers. I recall when Apple released the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10 back in 2017. And I can recall these were the first two phones that had wireless charging. And I can remember customers saying, or some of my readers saying, oh, how amazing is this? They have wireless charging. And these are people who've used nothing but Apple products, so they don't know what other products allow. And my response was, well, Samsung's actually been using this wireless charging for a few years now, probably 4 or 5 years even at that point. So you can just imagine with all the VR headsets and companies that are out there already, when Apple put their hat in the ring, it's going to validate the technology and it's going to make people more aware of the technology. Now, the thing that I'm hearing as well is that this is not, if and when this comes out, the VR headset is not going to be cheap. We're talking, I've read it could be between $3,000 and $4,000 US, which is, that's like $5,000 Australian. Don't know if that's true or not, but Apple, I don't think, are capable of making a cheap device. Their phones even, that they don't have a cheap phone because they can't make a cheap phone, just like they can't make a cheap VR headset and cheap laptops. All their laptops are well over $1,500. Other companies can punch out a Windows laptop for less than $1,000 from all these different companies, but Apple just can't do that. They just can't make something cheap. And the VR headset, by all accounts, by all the rumors, I should say, is not going to be a cheap device either. So that's Worldwide Developers Conference. Looking forward to that in early June. So there will be the keynote, of course, early morning, June 6 our time. And that's when all the announcements will be made. And then, of course, developers can take part in the four-day event, having their daily sessions and interacting with Apple engineers and testing their code and doing all of that at the Worldwide Developers Conference, which kicks off June 5, June 6 in Australia. If you want to read more about WWDC 2023, check it out at techguide.com.au. Now, you know, the famous line in Top Gun is when Tom Cruise turns to Goose and says, "I feel the need for speed." Well, that's something that regional Australians have been saying for quite a while, especially since the NBN had been rolled out and they were not really getting the speeds that they were hoping for. They were served by a satellite system like the SkyMaster system, which really didn't do very well in terms of speeds and performance. It's not like you can run fiber to all these remote places around Australia. Well, NBN has decided now to improve the situation by offering the faster speeds to regional Australians using the NBN fixed wireless network. So there's basically a cellular network that they've created for regional Australians where they can receive the signals. So it'd be 4G speeds, which is way better than what they've got through the satellite, to 24,000 homes and businesses in the first phase. So this is remote and regional areas around Australia. This is part of the $750 million investment. This is partly Australian government and also the rest chipped in from the NBN's profits itself. So this is part of that investment, which is starting with just the 24,000 homes and businesses, but also adding another 120,000 homes in the near future. So we are seeing a huge improvement for regional Australians who have long suffered the slow speeds that they couldn't, that was pre-NBN type speeds and performance. So really good to see that the upgrades for regional Australians. NBN is saying that they expect the all to be completed around the end of 2024 to give them way better performance for their NBN. So better bang for their buck. There has been a lot of people in regional Australia have used Starlink, which is Elon Musk's company, where you have a satellite dish and it then connects to satellites in low Earth orbit and can give you speeds well over 100 megabits per second to any place on Earth. You can be in the middle of nowhere and get that speed. Now, that's all well and good, and the people who have paid the money for the service are very happy with it, but it is quite expensive. You've got to pay upfront for the equipment, the satellite dish, the modem, all of that stuff. Then you got to pay your monthly fee, which is around $120 to $140 bucks a month to get these sorts of speeds, which are on average about 120, 140 megabits per second. So getting the result, but you're paying for it. Now, with these new fixed wireless networks in regional areas, they'll probably be getting around 100 megabits per second, if not more, depending on where they are, of course, but it's going to be a massive improvement of what they had previously. So moving in the right direction. It is taking a little bit of time, but it's Australia. You've got to remember, Australia is such a large country. It's not like smaller countries that can just put fiber everywhere. We are such a big nation and not everyone lives in these regional areas. So I think the solution they've come up here with the fixed wireless networks, I think is going to be a massive improvement. It's not like having fiber to the premises where you get a gigabit per second, but wireless technology is improving, 4G, one day 5G, and so on. You're going to see those improvements and those speeds are going to improve well into the future. If you want to read more about those upgrades, check it out at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly supported by Netgear. They're Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand. If your home demands superior Wi-Fi, treat it with a masterpiece in connectivity. Bring your Wi-Fi up to speed with Orbi Wi-Fi 6E from Netgear. Orbi Wi-Fi 6E is the first and only Wi-Fi 6 quad-band whole home mesh system, opening an exclusive all-new 6 gigahertz superhighway that's fine-tuned to deliver unprecedented Wi-Fi speeds and smoother streaming simultaneously across the smart homes of today and tomorrow. It's Wi-Fi perfectly engineered. Wi-Fi 6E, the fastest Wi-Fi ever. Find out more at netgear.com.au/best Wi-Fi.
And now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenech.
Well, it's a very EV-centric show this week because I spoke at the top of the show about the new Ford Mark E Mustang EV, the SUV. And I'm talking about another electric SUV, and that happens to be the Tesla Model Y Performance. Now, I've driven the initial Tesla Model Y, and that was the rear-wheel drive model. So it was a story because it's the new Tesla model, but didn't quite have the credentials of the performance model, say, of the Model 3. So now Model Y from Tesla is now being offered, very first models now being offered in Australia, of the performance iteration of the vehicle. Now, outwardly, the cars look almost identical. So this is an all-electric mid-size SUV. I mentioned at the top of the show that the Mark E Mustang SUV, similar sort of larger rear boot and storage space in the back. Same with the bubbly sort of rear end of the Model Y, which has a similar look to the front as the Model 3, but the Model Y sits a little bit higher off the ground, has a bit more headroom, more storage space, so it's more down your SUV path. But as I said, design-wise, Model Y rear-wheel drive to Model Y performance, virtually the same. Outwardly, performance does come with better wheels. It's got a 21-inch Uber turbine wheels. You do also have the red performance brakes as well. You can see them through the wheel. You also have the suspension has been lowered slightly, and there is a carbon fiber spoiler on the back as well, this little spoiler. But apart from that, looks the same as the rear-wheel drive Model Y. Now, inside the car also looks virtually identical. You've still got that amazing huge screen, really minimal look. There's no cluster in front of the steering wheel. It's all driven from the central screen inside. And it is pretty roomy inside too, like for the driver, the passenger. The rear passengers have plenty of room. Bit of headroom as well above the driver. Like I'm 6'1" and there was still plenty of room above my head for the all glass roof. You do get the aluminium pedals on the performance model, but it's under the hood where you see the difference. And it's called performance for a reason. Hello, it's because you're getting better performance. Now, with the rear wheel drive model, it was obviously the specs weren't as high. The reason that the difference didn't have the performance specs. Now, just to refresh your memory, the rear-wheel drive model, which meant that it only had a motor on the rear axle. Performance is dual motor, all-wheel drive. So that's the difference. Motor on each axle, performance model, rear-wheel drive, motor on the rear axle only. Rear-wheel drive model had a range of 455 kilometers, had a top speed of 217 kilometers, and went 0 to 100 in 6.9 seconds. Not too shabby. The Model Y rear-wheel drive starts at $69,300 Australian, and if you add enhanced autopilot and you decide for a different color and different interior, that'll take the price up to an on-road price of several thousand dollars more. Now, moving up to the Model Y Performance, which, by the way, starts at $95,300, which if you do your math real quick, it's about $26,000 more than the previous, so $26,000 more than the rear-wheel drive. But for your money, I mentioned the exterior features. You get the better tires, the better wheels, I should say, performance brakes, the carbon fiber spoiler. You get the slightly lowered suspension, the aluminium pedals, but you get the performance. Now, the difference here with the performance model is suddenly your range is 514 kilometers. A top speed is now 250 kilometers per hour. And the 0 to 100 is 3.7 seconds, which is a lot faster than 6.9 seconds. So it is much faster from a standing start, 3.7 seconds. And no doubt that's why they include the performance brakes, because, as I said with the Ford, if you can go 0 to 100 in 3.7 seconds, you want to be able to hit the anchors pretty smoothly and get you slowing down pretty quickly, and that's why. So you're paying that extra money for some exterior features, very little interior difference, but the performance is what you're paying for. So better range, 514 Ks, that's up from the 455 range. 250 kilometers an hour top speed, that's up from 217 kilometers an hour, and 0 to 100 in 3.7 compared to 6.9. So performance, it's all in the performance, all under the hood, where you will see and feel and live the difference. And as I said, it is $26,000 more from the starting price of the rear-wheel drive, $95,300. Is the starting price. And I think the model we drove, which had all the bells and whistles, enhanced autopilot, had everything in it, white seats and grey, it was midnight silver colour. So I think on the road, you're going to pay about $110,000 for the Model Y performance. Now, drives fantastic. It's really smooth, really got really improved suspension as well. What I like about it is you're slightly higher off the ground. I know I drive the Model S, and it is like sitting on the road. It's really low car, as is the Model 3, not as low as the Model S, but lower than the Model Y. It does give you a nice elevated position and you really good vision out of all the windows. Even for your rear passengers who sit slightly higher than the front passengers, they can see quite well from the glass, through the glass roof and through the windows. It does offer a comfortable ride. It offers a real sure-footed drive. It's got the suspension's improved, so irons out those speed humps and bumps and stuff. So that's pretty cool. The minimal design, not everyone's a fan of that. The screen is where you control everything and monitor everything, and all the settings are there. There were no buttons in this car apart from to open and close your windows, and the buttons on the steering wheel, but that's it. There's nothing else in the car because it's all through that screen. Plenty of room in the back as well. Big enough. We tested it, of course, fit the golf clubs in there. They did fit in there, as well as our all-electric mini buggy. We could fit that in there also. So that's pretty cool. In the front as well, like the front trunk space, that is enough room there for you to put luggage in there, your shopping. That's pretty good. In the back, I should mention that there is also, like what you see when you open the back of the car, there is also a little door where you can store stuff even underneath that, because there's no spare tire in a Tesla. No spare. No electric car has a spare tire, you'll notice. So if you do have a flat, go to call roadside assistance and they'll bring you a new tire and take yours to be repaired. It's happened to me twice in 5 years that I've been driving a Tesla with my Model S. That's happened to me twice. I've had to call and get a tire, and then I go to the service center and to get my repaired tire put back on the car. So what they give you is a loaner, then they repair your car or repair your tire. Or in what happened to me, the tire couldn't be repaired. I had to pay $600 for a new tire, so that was unfortunate. But it's still, though, there is that service to bring you a tire. Hopefully, you don't get a spare tire in the middle of nowhere, because it's going to take a while to get it. But luckily for me, it was here at home, but also it was actually a 2GB one night, and I had to bring it into the car park at 2GB and replace my tire. Fun and games. But the Model Y, of course, electric car, you need to have. There's an optional charger you can purchase. There are plenty of chargers around. The Tesla Supercharger network, there's a few places around Sydney and other metro areas, Melbourne, Brisbane, there's a lot of them. But the around the country, the supercharger network is pretty vast. So if you're going from Sydney to Melbourne, Sydney to Brisbane, wherever you happen to be traveling, you can go and charge your car along the way just using superchargers. And that's not even including all the other community chargers in car parks and hotels and wineries and that you can use that work with the Model Y, these type 2 chargers that allow you to do it. It's a whole new discussion about whether you're ready for an EV. I think the two key things to look at, it's around charging, of course. If you can charge your car at home and if you can charge your car at work or somewhere else where you go quite often, that's half the battle. Everyone faces the same challenges on long drives, and hopefully there are chargers. The car will tell you where to charge. But if you can charge your car, if you know you'll be able to charge your car, not a problem, in your driveway, in your apartment, wherever you happen to live, I reckon that's half the battle. And there are a lot of people who want to drive an EV, but they don't have anywhere to charge it. They don't have off-street parking. They might live in an apartment and there's no charger in their apartment. So that could create a bit of difficulty. But I think once you sort that out, if you can have a charger in your own driveway, if you've got a house and you've got off-street parking, you can find it. And then I think that'd be the ideal time, I think, to look, because you want to have that assurance that you know that if you do need to charge, you can charge the car in your own driveway. That is the Tesla Model Y performance model. Some pretty decent improvements there. You want to see our story and watch our video. We did a video too about the car. You can check all of that out at techguide.com.au. Next up, we are talking about the Sonos 100 or Sonos Era 100 and Era 300. And I think, as I've said in my review, appropriately called Era because they are the start of a new era with this brand. These are really good looking speakers, great sounding speakers as well. And they really do maintain the appeal of Sonos speakers for existing customers. So if you're a customer because they sound great, you can connect them wireless in your house, you've got this wireless network of speakers and they tick all those boxes. But they also can appeal to – they can bring new customers to the table as well because they've got tremendous quality, great connectivity, and they look and sound amazing. Now, there's two models, the Sonos Era 100, which is $399, and there's the Sonos Era 300, which is $749. And as you'd expect, they can stream your audio via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, and you can also connect other devices with an auxiliary cable. So if you want to use the speaker to connect it to a source, you can do that as well. But the Sonos Era 300 really takes things in a new direction. We'll talk about that in a moment. Let's start with the Sonos Era 100. Now, this is the smaller speaker that really does punch above its weight in terms of sound quality and just the scale of sound. It has a tiny footprint and still produces this vast sound. Also has, I'm so impressed with the bass out of this little speaker. Now, it's basically a redesigned Sonos One speaker, but it does have improved acoustic performance. There are two angled tweeters and a large mid-woofer. The two angled tweeters can actually create stereo sound, so real left and right output, while the large mid-woofer can really give you a level of bass that you'll be looking at this little speaker. Is that sound actually coming from that little thing? It's remarkable. Probably the deepest and best bass I've heard on a speaker of this size. That's how impressive it is. And of course, audio quality is tremendous. It gives it does live up to that Sonos quality. But you know what? The Sonos Era 300 has, they've really gone up to another level here, both in terms of design and acoustic performance. Now, what I love about this is that Sonos has really swung for the fences with this one because it does have a rather unique design. It has a little bit of an hourglass shape to it. So it does have the front and the back of the speaker are large and there's like a thinner section in the middle. This is deliberate because it has to accommodate this new acoustic architecture on board. So the big thing though with this speaker is that it offers, is compatible with spatial audio. And we're talking Apple Music, Amazon Music. They now offer spatial audio / Dolby Atmos on those streaming services. And I've got to say, when we got it working, I don't know why, but the Era 100, we connected in a minute. But the Era 300, we were having trouble connecting it to our account and the Wi-Fi, and it took about half an hour to work out why it wasn't connecting. I just scrubbed it, started again, and still didn't work, and tried again, and eventually I got it to work. I don't know why it didn't work the first time, but I did eventually get it connected and connected my services, Apple Music and Amazon Music, to the app as well. And then once we started listening to the music, it was an emotional experience, I've got to say. Now, you got to remember, this has the acoustic performance, so it's got up-firing speakers, tweeters, and all this structure to handle and to create these different channels and origins for your sound. So with any Dolby Atmos or spatial audio, you are hearing multiple layers of the music. It's coming from above you, beside you, and around you. And it is really being creatively used by artists to give you a lot more than just two channels and a subwoofer. It is really creating this adventurous sound around you. Now, the funny thing is, though, and I played all types of music on this speaker, regular music, like just your normal output, not the non-spatial audio music, I should call it, and the spatial audio / Dolby Atmos music. Now, most regular tracks sounded amazing. They were really good. But you know what? There were some that sounded, for some reason, they even sounded a little tinny through the Era 300. Reason for that, I reckon there wasn't enough for the audio. It didn't give the speakers enough to do. There are so many features and architecture within the speaker. These particular tracks, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but they said, I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds a little bit thin through the speaker. And I reckon it's because they weren't a challenge for the speaker. They just didn't give it enough to do. I don't know, that might sound strange, but that was only for a select number of tracks. But when we got to the spatial audio, and there's plenty out there to listen to, I've got to say I was gobsmacked. I really was impressed by the sheer scale of the sound and the layers to the sound. Like I was listening to Jean-Michel Jarre The Weeknd and all their songs in spatial audio that really created this whole room-filling sound. So there was these layers and sounds coming from above us and beside us and near us, and it was so nuanced as well. Like every part of it, it was like there were several sources. There wasn't a speaker in front of us. It's like there were speakers scattered around the room. That's what it sounded like. And as I said earlier, it really created a deeper emotional connection to your music, especially if you're hearing music that you know very well now. If there's a Dolby Atmos version of a song you know very well, and this is what I was feeling when I was listening to this music, it's like hearing them for the first time again, because there was all this detail that I was missing out on before, and that was suddenly now available in all its glory, with thanks to the Era 300 and its Dolby Atmos spatial audio accommodating speaker setup. So just tremendous. Now, what you can do with the Era 300, you can actually pair two of them with a Sonos Arc or Sonos Beam Gen 2 soundbar. So you can actually use them as home theater rear speakers. Would have loved to have done it. I only had one of the Era 300 speakers, but I reckon that would sound amazing. If it could handle the rear channels of a movie as good as it can handle spatial audio for a song, then it would sound pretty cool. But then you got to buy two of them. So that's going to set you back. That's $1,500 right there just to buy two of them. It's $749 just for one. So if you're a real Sonos fan and you've already got the Arc or Beam Gen 2, this could be an option. But I think it's probably... it's going to serve you best, I reckon, as just your music speaker. And if you're pumping spatial audio, Dolby Atmos music through it, It's going to be, for some music that you really love, it's going to be almost a religious experience. It's going to make you – it'll bring a tear to your eye, but if especially if it's a favourite song of yours that's now available in spatial audio Dolby Atmos. That's how strong it is. It's a, what a shame. One of my favourite songs ever is Bizarre Love Triangle by New Order. Sounded amazing on the speaker, but it wasn't available in Dolby Atmos. So it would have sounded tremendous, I think. It sounded good as it was, but in spatial audio, boy, it would have been way better. That is our Sonos Era 100 and Era 300 review. If you want to read our complete review, you can check that out at techguide.com.au. We've got all kinds of robots doing our housework for us. Ecovacs is one of the big brands. Roborock, you can see there's plenty of vacuum brands, robot vacuums already out there. But Ecovacs, while already having pretty solid robot vacuums and mops, they've added to their portfolio with a new robot called the Winbot W1 Pro. Now, this is a robot to clean your windows. So this incorporates the same cleaning and suction technology and the smarts of the system to navigate your windows the same way as it would navigate your floor. So there is a tether involved here. So there is it's not going to fall off the window and hurt people. So there is a safety feature built in. But it can go, if you've got big windows, you might have big sliding doors, you might have a glass shower. You might have glass pool fence. You might have a glass balcony. The W1 Pro, the Winbot, can do all of that for you. It has dual direction cross auto spray technology. So that is, it sprays the water so it creates enough moisture to get, it still maintains traction on the window, but it also has the multi-fiber cloth as well. So it cleans as it goes. And held into place by strong suction power of 2800 PA suction as well. So it's stuck on that window. It does also have edge detection. So it's traditionally a window has a frame. So once it hits the frame, it goes, right, okay, I've got to go back this way. Just as in the same way a robot vacuum, it senses the wall, it's going to turn back into the center of the room and continue. The Winbot will do the same thing. It'll detect not only the frame, but also has the ability to detect frameless edges too. So it does have these sensors. So I know a lot of pool fences, even shower screens, have that edgeless design. So no frame there. The Winbot can detect where the end of the line is there and then turn around and keep going back the other way. It has a 60 mil reservoir on board and a specially designed microfiber cloth. So it keeps things moist for a higher quality clean and really does really power through the windows. You can do something else rather than cleaning your windows. It's also, it's a safety thing too. I think there are a lot of customers who may have really tall windows or second story windows. If you can attach this from inside and let it do its thing and then take it, or maybe instead of you having to go and clean the top of a tall window, which would have required a ladder, you can just put this at the bottom of the window if you can reach it, and then it'll clean the whole window all the way to the top and all the way back down. It'll do it for you. Now, it's got these driving treads underneath. It has also got really precise gravity settings. Well, you need that. You're sideways on a window. So when all that's combined with the strong suction, you get that firm grip and the firmer wiping action on the glass. You've got to remember it's cleaning. It's spraying, cleaning, scrubbing, doing all of that. The unit can also, of course, be controlled remotely by the Ecovacs app. So you can get on with doing other stuff and you can monitor the clean and you can even control it remotely. So really good of Ecovacs has already released this into the market. And this they've been doing research on their robotics products already is the result of this amazing research and development. But they've poured all of that into this window cleaning robot that's going to get your windows spick and span. The Winbot W1 Pro, it's available now, priced at $799. You can buy it from Bing Lee stores and online from JB Hi-Fi. You can also buy it online at Bing Lee, Robot Specialist, Amazon, eBay, and ecovacs.com/AU. So check that out, Winbot W1 Pro from Ecovacs, the robot that cleans your windows. You want to read about it? Check it out at techguide.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly supported by Norton. They're the company that can keep you and your family safe online. It's a new year and our digital generation continues to see a rise in cybercrime and data breaches. Don't leave your devices without protection or your personal information open to exposure. It's time to have a plan to keep your devices and personal information protected. Save your time and money should the unthinkable happen and your devices are at risk to cyber threats like malware, ransomware, or viruses, or your personal information being exposed to cyber criminals looking to trade your details on the dark web. Introducing Norton 360 Platinum. With device security, a VPN for online privacy, parental controls, and identity protection with dedicated restoration support and dark web monitoring, you have a comprehensive plan in place to help ensure your information stays in private. It's peace of mind for your devices and your identity. With Norton 360 Platinum, if you become a victim of identity theft, you'll have access to their dedicated identity restoration specialists to help you address your identity theft claim and help you resolve it. Norton 360 Platinum is available now at Harvey Norman, JB Hi-Fi, or online at au.norton.com.
All your tech questions answered. This is the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Yes, the Tech Guide Help Desk is brought to you by our good friends at Belkin, belkin.com/AU. If you're after a MagSafe charger, you may want some noise-canceling earbuds. Belkin has got you covered there. You want a 3-in-1 wireless charger for all your Apple devices, a multi-port dock for your computers to connect monitors and other peripherals. Belkin has got you covered, along with other products like cables and Thunderbolt docks, which I've just mentioned, but also too the MagSafe products, charging stands, you name it, portable batteries as well. So the power banks to charge your mobile phone and other devices on the move, Belkin's got you covered. Belkin.com/AU. I got asked an interesting question, actually. Actually, this was an email sent to me by mistake. I had a guy saying, I heard you on your show on Saturday morning on 2GB talking about a laptop checklist. And I said, well, for a start, you've got me confused with Charlie Brown, who does 2GB on Saturday mornings. But I can help you anyway. So I wrote back to this guy and I gave him my own laptop checklist, which is I often get asked, what's a good laptop to buy? That's a really hard question to answer because I don't know how you're going to use it and where and why and when you're going to use it. So here are the things you need to ask yourself, and that is including to decide the screen size, for example. Are you going to use it for editing, gaming? So if those are the questions, if they're your answers, then a bigger screen would be desirable. If you're using it just for emails and Word docs and little things like that, screen size, you could probably get away with a smaller screen. Processing power, again, leads to asking the question, how are you going to use it? Are you going to be editing 8K video on the move? Are you going to be playing the highest end, high-end games? Then you'd be looking at probably the better processors. But if you're, again, mid-level user, the occasional editing, the occasional game, the email browsing, then you probably don't need the biggest, the best and greatest processor. You probably get middle or maybe slightly above middle on the processing side. How much storage do you want? Storage and memory are two different things. Memory is your random access memory. That's RAM. So what that is your computer's short-term memory that can let you run multiple apps at the same time. So the more RAM you can afford, the better. Storage is another thing. So storage is what you want to store on the computer, on the drive, whether you want the traditional platter drive, the traditional hard drive, or what's becoming even more popular now is the SSD drive, solid state drive, which is basically still a lot of storage, but it's basically like a memory card, which means the computer can be a lot thinner, lighter, and you can access that data even faster. And of course, the other thing to think about, things like connectivity. Do you need a Thunderbolt? Do you need a Thunderbolt port to connect an external monitor? Do you need a HDMI port to connect your TV? Do you need USB-C? Do you need a memory card slot? So they're the other little things you need to look at. And if you can address all those things, answer those questions, then you're in pretty good shape to choose a laptop. The That is our show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you made it to the end of the show. If you need to find out any more about what we've already spoken about, you can see it, of course, at techguide.com.au. Please get in touch with us as well. We'd love to hear from you. Email is info@techguide.com.au or click on the Ask Stephen icon on the right-hand side of the site, and that too will direct an email my way. We want to give a special thanks to our great sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs, and also Norton, the company that can keep you, your family, and your devices safe online. Please support the great sponsors who support the Tech Guide podcast. Thank you once again for listening. We'll be back with another show next week. So until then, stay safe and stay connected.